torts. Torts. Remedies that evolve throughout the common law, in which courts attempted to develop some type of means for individuals who are harmed by others to get some form of compensation. Just like crimes, each tort has elements, parts of which that are defined in the law, and the only way defendant can be held liable for committing said torts is if plaintiff can establish by a preponderance of the evidence the existence of each of the elements. If you cannot prove all, plaintiff gets nothing. It's all or nothing. Just like in a crime. Just like a crime. If a crime is committed, prosecution, the state must prove all of the evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. All or nothing. Now, many of the torts are literally the civil version of crimes that are established by statute. Going all the way back to the beginning. Much of the civil action comes out of common law, which comes from the courts. Crimes are defined by the state through the statutory or legislative process. So, in terms of torts that could and do impact businesses, one of the easiest is A and B. Assault and or battery. Now, by the way, you don't need both. You could have one or the other. And I've already defined these to you when I talked a little bit about crimes. Because businesses could do this, and people could do this to businesses. Or at least the people that work for the businesses. Assault. Assault is that, oh shit moment. That state of fear, the when plaintiff reasonably believes there is going to be imminent touching. So if we were to define it, it's very simple. Very simple. The reasonable fear of imminent contact. And if you really want to be specific, made by another. Without privilege or consent or anything. The key with assault, though, is plaintiff must see it coming. You cannot be assaulted from behind. Have to see it coming. So if I was to make a fist and take a swing, and you start coming, that potentially could be an assault. If, of course, it was reasonable that there would be harm associated with it. If you walk up to someone and do one of these, you know, that really in most people's eyes, just remember, civil. It's a reasonable person standard. Most people will not think, big smile, arms outstretched, you know, that harm is coming. But if it's something that a reasonable person would think harm is coming, yes, it could be. But you know what would not be an assault? If I did it behind and couldn't see anything. You have to see it coming. Questions? Then what is battery? Well, battery is the touching. Battery is the touching. It is the unpermitted, unprivileged, intentional contact with another's person. And by the way, touching could occur by anything that leaves defendant's body. If someone's yelling at you and they spit in your face, that's battery. If someone takes a notebook and throws it at you, that's battery. But of course, the key is, has to be an intentional act. Now, of course, we talked about this a bunch of times. That doesn't mean that the person intended to do the contact. No, that just meant they intended to do whatever it was that started that line of dominoes that resulted in the contact. So, one of the things that I used to do back when I was a wee bit of a lad is I used to love America's pastime of baseball. And I was an baseball player. That's the reason why the coach either had me catching or playing first base or playing right field. Because that way I didn't have to really run too far, didn't have to do anything too athletic, and people could throw the ball to me. I could catch. But you know what I could also do? I could knock the shit out of a baseball. Why? I didn't have any style. They didn't train kids like they do now. I'd just get up at the plate and I'd just put everything I could into the swing. Every single swing. So that meant I struck out a lot too. But I didn't care. If I was gonna hit the ball, I was gonna crush it. Well, there was a game, and I'll never forget. We were down by two. I had already hit two home runs in the game. And the pitcher was completely gassed. They didn't have anyone else to throw. So their coach decides to intentional walk me. And I got pissed. I didn't want to get intentionally walked. I wanted to get the walk off. Win the game. So when the fourth pitch came in, I threw my baseball bat out of frustration. Went straight, bounced on the ground, and then went up and it knocked out the pitcher. Did I mean to batter him? No, he was actually one of my good friends in school. But did I mean to throw the bat? Yes, I did. Hence, if they would have sued me, that could have been a battery. The key is you have to establish the intent behind the act that starts the chain. Questions? Now, by the way, if you batter someone, they do not have to be aware of it. They just have to have provable harm. So if you get knockout drunk and you fall down in front of me, and I decide, wouldn't it be funny if I just went to that? Cracked a rib. That would be a battery. Even though you didn't see it coming.
Who won the game?
Not us.
Would have been nice though. Questions? Now, does defendant have defenses? Absolutely. For every possible act, defendant does have defenses that defendants, if they could establish by a preponderance of the evidence, could eliminate. Any or all of the elements, such as consent. Ready to see how it works? Do I have your permission to touch you on the shoulder? She gave me consent. Touched her on the shoulder. That could never be a battery. She said, sure. Now, if I asked her, could I just tap you on the shoulder, and she says yes, and then I punch her in the face, that's a different scenario. Conditional privilege. You know who has a right to touch you? Your doctor. Your parents. Family members. You know who also has a right to touch you, which would be necessity? You're passed out and the EMTs come. Or the police or the fire department. Pick you up, help you. They can do whatever is necessary to try to mitigate the harm from you. Oh, and of course, if you take a swing at me, and I dodge it, and I get all Chuck Norris on you, and I knock you out, all I need to do is prove that you swung first. And then I am allowed to retaliate in proportion to your act. So if you swing at me, I can't pull out my gun and shoot you. Or stab you with a sharp knife. You can bring a fist to a fist fight. You can bring a knife to a knife fight. You can bring a gun to a gun fight.
What happens if he punches you first and then you just go crazy on him and punch him back 20 times after that?
It depends. What was a reasonable level of response to mitigate the threat that that person posed to you?
So, if you like a problem, and then it started like hitting, can I just like have all fours on him and just pin his
neck? Yeah, but you can't knock him unconscious and then kick him in the head, and you can't go to town. It has to be proportionate.
These are the important questions he's got.
Yeah, well, I know what he's going to be doing this Saturday. He's either going to be the robber. No. Other questions? So again, it could be as something as simple as, oh, you're smoking a cigar, and someone walks at you, you just go, blow out a big blast of smoke. That's battery. Anything that comes from you. Intentionally. So, like, if you're sitting in the kitchen and you're cooking and you accidentally cut your finger and a chunk of blood comes out and hits somebody, yeah, you didn't mean to do that. It was an accident. But if it's something intentional, yes, it could be battery. And again, remember, it's a row of dominoes. So, if I meant to pick up the desk and throw the desk and I throw it up, it hits the ceiling vibrates and some of the tiles come out and hit you, it's not the fact that I didn't hit you with what I threw, it's that I started the line of dominoes going. Any other questions? All right. Trespass! We know what trespass is. Trespass includes every unauthorized entry onto the land of another. If you go into someone's property and you don't have their permission, the right to be there, you are committing a trespass. But just because you walk into someone's yard, does that mean they can sue you? Well, yeah, they could go out and hire an attorney and they could sue you, but what are they going to get out of it? What's the key thing that is necessary for all torts?
Intent.
No, well, yeah, there's intent in what else? In order for the plaintiff to win, there has to be some type of damage. So if you just go in and go out and you do no damage, they can sue you for the trespass, but the court can't give them anything. Plus, believe it or not, there are reasons why you would have the right to enter the land of another, even if you do not have their permission. Obviously, the big one is consent. Sure, come on over. We've already established the three types of occupants that go onto the land of another. We've already done that. Privilege. You enter the land for the reason that it's held open. So you go into Walmart because you're going shopping. That's a privilege. You have a right to enter Walmart for the purpose of shopping. Or necessity. Oh, my son, unlike his old man, was actually a very good pitcher. But it took lots of backyard throws to get him to that point. And I remember every now and then when he'd work on a knuckleball or a curveball, the ball would just go flying over my head. Of course, I'm old and fat. Tried jumping up the best they could, catch ball, just went over my head into the neighbor's yard. Did I have permission to walk into my neighbor's yard? No. But what am I doing? I'm retrieving my property. I have a right to do that. That's a necessity. If you have a reason to go get something that's yours, so long as you cause no damage, then you have the right. That would be a defense. Now, by the way, just like a battery is a line of dominoes, a trespass could also be caused by a line of dominoes. There was a guy that I crossed paths with. I don't remember where, but at some point I told him or someone told him that I was a lawyer. So he had a legal question for me. His neighbor had bought a retreat lot, so it wasn't a lot of property that was on the road, but rather it had a small entry right away, and it was actually behind where his house was. And when they cut the trees down and regraded the land and built his house on, suddenly water was pouring down the hill in a direction that it never did and flooding a portion of his yard. He complained he wanted to get the town involved, and I'm like, no, the town's not going to do anything about that. But you could sue him. Because did those neighbors intentionally mean to build a house? Yes. Did they fail to plan the grading of their yard in such a way that would mitigate the flow of water? No, obviously not. So that potentially could be a cause of action for trespass. The water that's coming off of their land going into another. The thorn, we talked about that, the case of thorns. The guy was trimming his hedges and a branch went in the other yard. He went to go retrieve his branch, but he caused damage to the hay. Did he have the right to go get it? Yes, but he caused damage, so he was held responsible for it. You know what also could be considered a trespass? Fly a drone over someone's land that is below 100 feet. I think that's what the law is referring to. If you have to fly above 100 feet, it's below 100 feet. That's an aerial trespass. If a company wants to come in and put utility lines through your yard and they don't get your permission, it's also considered an aerial trespass. You know what also was considered a trespass? The intentional interference with someone's personal property. So if someone comes and takes your stuff, that under the common law would also be considered a trespass. But in Massachusetts, we define that as a conversion, and we're going to talk about that.
All right, questions? Oh, conversion.
Conversion is any intentional action that results in the removal of one's property by another with the intent to deprive that person of their ownership rights. Any intentional act in which you're removing personal property of another with the intent to deprive. In other words, I want to take it and keep it for my own. That's a conversion. What right do you have over your property? What rights you have over your personal property? Does anybody know? If you own something, what can you do to it? Yeah, not a trick question. Whatever you want. You can use it, you can abuse it, you can sell it, you can burn it. It's yours. But if someone takes that from you, what are they doing? Yeah, but they're depriving you of your right to use it as you wish. That's a conversion. Conversion is the civil version of theft, larceny. Well, larceny is actually technically the crime. It's the same thing. The only difference is if you commit larceny, you're going to jail. If you commit a conversion, someone's going to sue you for money damages. Questions?
Yes?
It's a bit of a stretch, but I'm going to throw it out there. So conceivably, how would it work if a child who's over the age of 18, the parents take away the phone because they don't want to pay for it anymore, whatever, but they've given it to the property to the child. It's the child's property, but they're not a minor anymore. They're an adult. And you take the said property away because you don't like behavior, whatever it is. A parent is exercising their right as being that, but they have given the gift to the child.
All right, so that gets really, really, really complicated.
We all are paying attention to this.
Oh my God, you're never going to believe what my professor said!
I've never taken this many notes in a
All right, first off, if the child is under the age of 18, they have no rights so long as they live under your roof. If you give them something, that is you are taking care of your parental need, which technically means it's still yours. So long as the phone contract is in the parent's name, not the child, that service is controlled by the parent. But if you gift the phone itself to a child and they become an adult, that's their phone. So technically, legally speaking, you cannot take your phone, your child's phone, but you can shut off their calling plan.
My husband does it all the time.
I love it. I love it.
But could your child then turn around and sue you? Yeah, they could. Yeah, they could. And don't forget, we're in Massachusetts. And we have judges that make shit up all the time, so
just be careful with that. The key is, though, raise a good child. Raise a good child. All right. Defenses to conversion. Consent.
Can I borrow your phone? Or necessity.
Necessity.
We see these all the examples of this all the time. If you watch like a goofy police, movie. Stop, I'm police! And they commandeer the vehicle. Yeah, if they actually have it. And in real life, if a cop does that and they show a badge, yeah, they do have the right to borrow your car. Of course, they would be responsible for any damage that occurred to it. But yes, they could do that. They could do that.
Questions? Fraud. Ooh, we already did criminal fraud.
We did criminal fraud.
The elements are exactly the same. The elements of tortious fraud is the same as criminal fraud. The intentional misrepresentation of a material existing fact made to another person with knowledge of falsity and for purpose of inducing the other person to act and upon which that person reasonably relies, resulting in damages.
Fraud. If I try to sell you a car, and I tell you, man, do I have a bargain for you? I will sell you a 2020 Hyundai with only 3,000 miles on, driven by my grandmother, properly maintained, still smells like new, for $500. And you get so excited and you whip out the $500. And I say, see ya! I perpetrated a fraud. I told you a lie. I did not actually have the car. But why did I tell you that lie? I wanted you to act, to give me the money. And you gave me the money. You reasonably felt, oh, my professor, he's a nice guy. He would never lie to me. So you gave me the money. And then I took off. And you're out $500 and you got no car. That would be a fraud. You know what would also be a fraud? Change it up a little bit. Same details on the car, but when I show up after you've given me money, I gave you a car. But it is a 1977 Ford Pinto. The only car is just on their design that if you gave them a little bumper kiss, they would blow up. And it doesn't just have 3,000 miles on it. It has 375,000 miles on it. That's what the odometer shows. But the odometer's already flipped. Well, you look at the car. I gave you a car. But that's not the car I'm describing. Did I know I really didn't have the car I was describing? Yes. Again, I said something that I knew was false. You gave me the money, reasonably believing that I would come through. One last little change of facts for you. One last little change of facts. Same situation, but I am not your trusted, beloved professor. No. I'm some random guy standing behind you in the coffee shop. And I'm wearing dark clothes. And I have hair that's all greasy and slide back. I got dark sunglasses on, and I got a weird looking grin on my face. And I tell you the same story. And I even show you a picture of the car. But the picture is clearly not a picture. It's a colored image with crayon. And then you give me the money in spite of all those facts. Can you sue me for fraud? Are you going to win? Was your reliance reasonable in that situation? Would a reasonably minded person think some slick, mischievous looking person with a crayon colored picture of a car, claiming to have this wonderful car, would a reasonable person think that that deal was legit? Because if you believe that's legit, man, I got a bridge to sell you. Yes, I do.
So the key to all these things is that reasonable person standard. But
if everything passes the reasonable person muster, there is no defense. You do not have a right to defraud somebody of their money, their goods, their time, their services. The law expects everyone to engage in a truthful manner. Remember, that's the whole point of the law, to establish standards for society.
Questions? Ah, tortious interference with a contract. Again, these are torts that would impact a business. Tortious interference with a contract. All right, tortious interference with a contract is where
two parties, because we're going to talk about contract law for the final third of the class. Contract is where two parties basically come to an agreement in which both are going to do something for the other. You're going to sell me a box of widgets, I'm going to give you money for the widgets. Two parties make an agreement to do something of value for each other.
The U.S. Constitution itself guarantees the sanctity of contracts.
If you breach a contract, that is considered a federal offense. The federal courts have jurisdiction. So, If a third party attempts to do anything that interferes with a legitimately formed contract, that's a tort, and they could be held liable. I'll give you an example. Let's say I own the Boston Red Sox, and you are a phenomenal, that makes more sense, shortstop. And I'm looking for a shortstop. So I make a contract. I'll give you a 3-year deal. I'll have a base contract of $2 million per year, and I'll sprinkle in all kinds of performance incentives that if you meet, you'll have the ability over the life of the contract to potentially double. You get all excited. You're ready to sign on the dotted line. But about an hour before you come to my office to meet with me, the owner of the New York Yankees calls you and says, don't sign with LeMantic's club. He has no intention on letting you play. He instead is going to send you down, not even to the Woo Sox. He's going to send you all the way down to the Portland Sea Dogs. And he's really not going to give you that money every single year. Why? Because the players up there, they literally get paid peanuts and hot dogs, whatever the people don't eat. That's what their salary is. And performance incentives? Forget about it. He's not even going to let you get your face on a baseball card. And you believe it. So you call me up and say no deal. The owner for the Yankees perpetrated tortious interference with the contract. He told you lies that convinced you not to sign with the club. You suffered damages. You lost the chance to play baseball for the MLB. I suffered damages. I lost the potential future stud, playing shortstop. You are not allowed to interfere when two people are trying to do business. Now, as far as defenses go, privilege. What if it was not the Yankees owner, but your manager? Not your manager, your agent, that's what I meant to say. Your agent that told you those things. And it was your agent that convinced you not to sign. Or what if it was your significant other? Or your parents? They have special privilege because they have a close relationship with you and they're trying to look out for your best interests. They could tell you that and I couldn't turn around and sue. But in order to establish a claim, you actually have to prove that there's a contract that has been developed. So that's the challenge if you're going to sue somebody for that. Is there a contract? Tortious interference with a prospective advantage. Tortious interference with a prospective advantage is where you interfere with established relationships. So let's say that I own Papagino's. I got real creative with that hypothetical. And you are a producer of cheese. And we have been working together. I've been buying your cheese regularly for 5 years. You always deliver to me your best cheese. I always pay you within the required 30 days. We are successful. successful business partners.
But Burger King, for whatever reason, decides they want to go into the pizza business. Kind of seems antithetical to their name. Not Pizza King, it's Burger King. But they want to go in and make pizza. So they contact you, the cheese distributor, and offer to pay more than I have been paying you if you stop delivering cheese to me. Well, here's the thing. If I get no cheese, I have no business. The sad thing is, you don't even care if you sell a single slice. You just want to deny the eating options for the students at Quinn's sake. Take me off the map, then more kids will come down to your store. Evil. That, my friends, is Torres' interference with a prospective advantage. Here is when you interfere with a binding agreement that's trying to be formed or is formed. Here, you're trying to interfere with an established relationship that's mutual beneficial to both parties. You do not have the right to do so. But again, the tortfeasor's conduct must be intentional. If the owner of Burger King has no idea I'm buying cheese from you, and he simply calls up and wants to buy all the cheese you have on hand for a better price, just out of sheer luck, I can't turn around and sue him. He hadn't, that person did not know. He was not trying to intend to interfere. He was just trying to do something for his own business. That's fine. That's allowable. That's not tortious interference with the prospective advantage. And what are the defenses? Well, privilege. Let's say instead of it being the owner of Burger King that calls, let's say it's someone from the city's Board of Health. And they find out that students are getting sick from buying my pizza. So it's the Board of Health that puts the call into the cheese distributorship and says, stop delivering them cheese. That would be privilege. They would be allowed to do that. Questions? Okay. Intrusion of privacy. Intrusion of privacy. Believe it or not, you actually have a reasonable right to have privacy in your life. But the reasonability is based on your expectations for privacy. Meaning it depends on where and when we're talking about. The most secure place for privacy is one's
house.
Even beyond the house. Most intimate of spaces. Bedroom, bathroom.
Where we as human beings have a tendency to do those nasty things that we do. Particularly if you have Mexican on a Thursday night for Taco Tuesday. Whew.
But if someone attempts to intrude upon those private spaces, they are committing a tort.
So, what would be the elements? Well, of course, there has to be some type of physical intrusion. I can't remember her name. She was a woman, sports, broadcast, Erin. I don't remember her name. She was kind of tall, blonde. She sued a hotel because one of the maintenance guys had actually knew that she was staying there and drilled a hole in the ceiling and had cameras recording her when she was doing the bathroom stuff. That would be considered intrusion of privacy. You have to do something to physically intrude upon those private spaces. You have to do that intentionally. And of course, it has to be a private matter. Whatever it is you're allegedly intruding on, it has to be a private matter. I can't think of anything more private than when you sit down on the porcelain god to do the poo-poos and the pee-pees. Or you go into the shower to clean yourself. Yes?
Well, I know this probably doesn't really have much, but you like the double, like, mirrors or whatever, you could, like, see through one,
yes.
And, like, the other side, it's, like, completely, like,
yes.
Kind of, like, fun, kind of. What if you have a company come in with that, and you don't know, and then, like, it's in, like, the rooms that's, like, you can, like, somehow just, like, see through it, because, like,
did you know that there was a secret space behind the mirror where the mirror was hung? That would allow someone to go and actually... Because if you have a two-way mirror...
It's too pretty.
Right, yeah. Yeah. If, I know. You can really work.
I've seen so many videos.
If you have a two-way mirror and they just simply put it on the wall, yeah. Is that going to do anything?
No.
No. But if you're going to have a company come up and put a two-way mirror and you know there's a spot behind it, yeah. And then you walk behind it and you look through, you're doing an intentional act. Yes?
I can give an example. And it's weird to say this, but at Disney World, there was a bar, dance hall, that was on Pleasure Island. If you go back and know that, it's mm-hmm. an old thing. There, it was the country bar, and in the men's room, there was, like where the sinks were, there was a mirror that you could see into the dance hall. But if you went up close enough, you could look into the men's room.
And what were you doing on that?
It was boyfriends at the time. They were like, there's a double thing. You can see into this. So, of course, we're like, you shut the front door. That's not right. So we went and we looked and we're like, holy crap, you can actually see in there if you're close enough to the wall.
I can't imagine why the owner of that establishment would have done it and why Disney allowed it. I know. They pulled it all down. I know. But, yeah.
I'm gonna clear it up. Me and my sister went to a dress shop, and the person had a mirror, like a certain mirror that made you look really, really good in this dress. And we were like, oh, we want to try this mirror, and she was like, no, this mirror. So we looked it really. So that is okay. So something.
Yeah, because they have this
you
device.
You look really good in this dress.
Well, I'm sure you look really good in it anyways, but if we're doing
you
something...
You went to the other mirror, you didn't.
If we're telling you something that's not truthful to induce you to do something that you wouldn't do, that's a fraud. That's a fraud.
That's like this is the Disney version.
All right. Now, what could avoid intrusion of privacy? Knock, knock, knock. Come on in! Or, I love this one. I had a neighbor, so my house is kind of up on a hill. I got a neighbor that's down below. And for some reason, they didn't think that when I look out my window, sure, I do have a tendency to look straight, but I also look down, and I also look up. You know, a window! Look to the left, look to the right. And every now and then, I'd go to the window, put the shade up in the morning, look out, and look, just happen to scan the area, and of course, their shades are all up, and they had tendency—they like to sleep all natural. And every now and then, I would get a view that I didn't really want to see. And one time, I let them know, "Do you know that I can see everything in your bedroom? What are you eating? What are you looking? What are you coming up snoop?" I'm like, "You stand butt-ass naked in front of the window and you do a big stretch. Why do you? What am I supposed to do?"
Well, again, reasonable expectation of privacy is based upon the reasonable person standard. Would a reasonable person think that if you sleep naked and you walk close to your window and you stretch and do yoga, that no one's going to see it? Well, if your backyard opens up into some type of, you know, privately owned forest of 100 acres, yes. But if your house is here and there's someone's house is here, anything that people can see from the curbside, you have no expectation of privacy. So by the way, pull your shades down.
No one wants to see it.
All right, the last one, commercial exploitation.
Commercial exploitation. If someone attempts to make money off of your likeness,
and you do not give them permission, they do not have a right to make profit over it. So, let's say you are walking down the street, minding your own business, and someone in a car just happens to drive by, and they see you walking down the street. They like the way that you walk because at a certain point in your stride, it looks like you're just being really active, and they take a picture of that. And then 4 months later, you're driving through 290 where they have one of those digital display boards, and suddenly see your walking ass up on the screen. Advertising for Nike sneakers. Do you have any lawsuit against them?
Absolutely.
Commercial exploitation. Because what do they not do?
Get your permission.
Do not get your permission. Two quick points. One of the forms that you filled out when you signed up to be a student here, you actually gave them your permission to take pictures of you on campus and use in their advertising. Did you know that? It's in there. Oh yeah, you did. And you want to know something also? Do you ever read the terms and conditions that are on all the apps that you use? I'll never forget. This was gone. It was when like Facebook started being popular. I had a student, an adult learner, that decided to go back to school a little later in life. They had kids, and they had posted some baby pictures on Facebook, and they saw those baby pictures in an ad. One of the pop-up ads that show up on Facebook. And this person was pissed. I want to sue. And you know what I said? Did you read the terms and conditions of Facebook? Nothing that you post on Facebook is yours the moment you upload it. Remember that. Particularly those of you who are real young and you have a tendency to do stupid, wild things. Oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we got a quick selfie with like a 6-inch or a 6-foot bomb. Whoa! It's posted on InstaSnap.
Yeah, those images can be used against you. Why? In order to use the apps, you have to accept all the terms and conditions.
Just like most apps, they have full access to your phone and all your data. They can track you.
They can look in your video file. They can look in your picture file. They can check your contacts. You give them all those permissions. So keep downloading those apps in the Google Store.
All right, questions?
All right, the other thing that I want to throw at you, so let's get rid of that. Woo. Damages.
Damages. If you're going to sue somebody, you're trying to get some type of
stuff from them. Why? Because harm was caused to you. Damages are, generally speaking, the common law remedies which the courts can impose to try to cure you of whatever harm you suffered. Now, the catch is, in order to get some type of damages, the court must find that you have a legal right to them. Meaning,
you can prove that there was a breach of duty and you were harmed as a result of the breach.
If you cannot prove that the person you are suing actually harmed you, A, you'll probably get knocked out for lack of standing. B, you're not going to get anything. You have to be able to prove it. Now, most damages come in the form of money. Money, 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 money. Money. Money is what makes the world go around. And I don't care how much of an ouchie you get. If someone gives you a big bag of money, that's better than the coolest salve with the most gentlest band-aid. But in order to get money, you have to be able to prove that the damage that you suffered was done by the defendant. The court's just not going to give you money. And the court is not just going to give you money just because you want it. The court is generally going to give you money in proportion to the harm you suffered. So, if you suffer $1,000 worth of damage to your car because someone drove into it, you're not going to be able to sue that person for $3.7 million. The court will say no. What could you get? Well, whatever's reasonable to cure the harm that you suffered. Now, generally speaking, there are two types of damages. There are the damages meant to cure, to compensate, commonly referred to as compensatory damages. But there are also times when defendant's actions were so egregious, malicious, that the court decides to impose what are called punitive damages. Compensatory, compensate. Punitive, punish. Questions so far? All right, let's break these down. Compensatory damages. Compensatory damages awarded to compensate plaintiff for the harm that they suffered at the hands of the defendant. Generally speaking, the harm, the losses, come from some type of tortious conduct. They committed a battery. They did a trespass. Something like that. Or breach of contract. Those are the two most common scenarios where you can go to court and you can get someone to pay you. If they caused you harm, some type of loss, or again, they breached a contract. 75-80% of cases involve cases coming from those two areas. Now, future losses are also recoverable. What do I have there? I do. All right, I don't have that one. Arise from tortious conduct or breach of contract. Future losses are possible if the damage that you suffered is foreseeable. Bless you. So, if we get a car accident and your car has to go into the shop for 3 weeks because it has to get body work and it also has to get new suspension and possibly, new muffler system. What would be a foreseeable loss that you could sue for?
Not being able to go to work.
So what are you going to need?
Salary.
No. Cheaper than salary because you have to mitigate losses. Court's not going to let you take 3 weeks off. Still going to have to go to work. But how are you going to get to work?
Rent
a car. Or public transportation, yeah. So what could be something you could also seek in addition to the damage caused to your car? Well, the cost to cover a rent a car. That would be allowed. What happens if you suffered physical injury? What would be foreseeable? Medical. Rehabilitation. Lost wages. Not being able to go to work. Anything that could reasonably be foreseeable that springs from the harm could be calculated into the total level of compensatory damages. The only catch is, it's the duty of the plaintiff to mitigate harm. So you can't make your situation worse. So, if I bumped into your car in the parking lot, and as a result of my truck hitting the fender of your little car, the fender bends in and pops the tire, but you decide, oh, I'm going to drive it home with a flat tire, and you wreck the rims and wreck your suspension and kind of cause the alignment and cause all this extra damage, you cannot get that out of me. You cannot make your situation worse and expect to be compensated. Again, the phrase is that the plaintiff has a duty to mitigate damages. You have to do whatever is possible to reduce the harm that you suffer. And you're also not allowed to recover for things that are just too remote, too indirect. So you've gotten in a car accident, but 7 months from now, you're scheduled to take a trip to go down to Florida because you're going to take a cruise. You can't turn around and say, whoa, my car was in the shop for 3 weeks, so I'm going to miss my cruise, so I'm going to sue you. No, that has nothing to do with the immediate situation. That's too far-fetched. That's too remote. Or, I got a bunch of car accidents. What was the last one I got into? I think it was when I lost my bus. I got rear-ended by a gravel truck. So I had to go to chiropractor, got medical treatment. That was all in the compensation that I received. But that was 30-odd, longer than that, man. I'm getting old. Almost 40 years ago now at this point. The one thing that nobody told me was that when I got to be my age, my neck wouldn't work anymore as a result of that injury. My neck only turns when I look to the left. But when I turn to the right, my neck actually doesn't pivot. Only the last access point right below my skull actually turns. That was not diagnosed. That was not realized. It's just something that happened to me as I got older. Well, I can't turn around and say, oh, by the way, 40 years later, because it wasn't foreseeable at the time. And at the end, just want to nail this point home. You're only going to get enough so that way you would be in a position equal to where you were before the harm occurred. So, if I caused a fender bender and did some damage to your car, court's not going to go out and allow you to buy a new 2027 model if you're driving around a 1993. Piece of held together with duct tape. That's what you're going to get, because that's where the position you were in that beforehand. And of course, this is mitigating damages. You cannot make yourself worse. You cannot do something that's going to cause harm to yourself. The court actually imposes a duty on you, believe it or not, for you to keep yourself safe. If things happen to you and it's your own fault, you can't turn around and sue somebody. You breached the duty to keep yourself healthy and happy. So, sad story, real sad story. Met a lot of people like this. Met some people that decided when they were young, they were going to do some really, really serious, hardcore drugs. And do it for long periods of time.
let's just say they're not as clever and as sharp as they were back when we were young. They've done permanent damage to themselves.
But whose fault is that? They made the decision. They're the ones who sit share the blame. All right, here's a hypothetical for you. Let's say you're going to sue me because your harvest of corn was impacted by actions that I allegedly committed. You claim that one day when I was cleaning up around the edges of my property, I took down some stakes that kept the cows out of your pasture. That's what you're claiming. Now, you knew I took the poles out because I told you I was going to. Because the poles were rotted. And if you went up and you pushed on it, not even hard, it was going to collapse anyways. But you did nothing to fix the situation. Meaning, you let your cows out into the adjacent field where the gap was. So the cows in your field went to the edge, went through the hole, came into my yard, which allowed them to make a quick left and go into your corn pasture. And they ate everything. Can you sue me? You can try, but I'm going to turn around and say, well, I told you that I was fixing the fence, and you chose to let your own damn cows out. If you didn't want your cows eating your corn, what could you have done?
Fix the fence.
What?
Fix the fence.
Or?
Not let your cows out.
You knew I was there, and you did it anyways. So it's not my fault. Not my fault. Questions? Here's another interesting question. What if you would be in a better situation as the result of me doing what I did? So, yeah, you knew that I was taking the fence down. And you really didn't want to harvest the corn this year? Because corn prices are very, very low and gas prices are really, really high. So you figured if you didn't have to cut the corn this year, you could actually save some money in the long run. Could you turn around and sue me because you are in a better position as the result of what I did? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, different situation, different facts. I am a trespasser. I, for whatever reason, enter into your land. And, just because, I don't know, I'm hopped up on cocaine or something, and lots of coffee, lots of those little Red Bulls. I just go into the yard and I dig a huge hole. I'm all pumped up, I burn out my energy. You wake up in the next morning and there's this big crater there. You're pissed. But as a result of that crater, 50 feet uphill a little bit, where you had a whole bunch of swampy land
and some of that swampy water was coming close to your house, penetrating the ground and going down into your basement, suddenly that swampy water begins pouring down towards the home and changed the flow of the water. Is the court going to give you any damages, any compensation for the hole that I dug into your yard? Probably not, because you actually got a benefit as a result of my actions.
Questions? There's the hole. All right.
Generally speaking, there are two broad categories of compensatory damages.
Two broad categories. And you're going to see this when you do the Bien case, by the way, which is one of the torts that I'm going to want you to do for next class, the torts one. I think that's four, three, four? No, we did one, two, three, four. Homework four. I told you to have it ready. And you didn't. It's still there.
General damages.
General damages. What's general damages? General damages generally are those things that are natural and necessary that give compensation for that wrongful act. So again, I take a baseball bat and I smash in your windshield. General damages would be the cost to replace the windshield.
Special damages are those that are natural but not necessarily the result of my wrong, me being the hypothetical defendant. So these are damages that come from special circumstances. So I take my baseball bat, smash the car, shatter the windshield, car has to go to Glass Plus to get a new windshield, and as a result, you are not able to go to the Red Sox game because you don't have a car that day. Well, you could sue me for cost of the repairs, and you could throw in as special damages compensation for your inability to go see the baseball game. Now, what could you get face value of the tickets or whatever you paid?
So, what are also general type of damages? Well, pain, suffering, mental anguish,
loss of consortium. This is going to put a smile on some of your faces. Any of you ever heard of that before? Loss of consortium? If you are married and you suffer some type of physical injury that inhibits your ability to perform maritals, you can actually sue. That has a value. Loss of consortium. That's part of a relationship.
Unless you get married to that certain point of years when the single digits become double digits and double digits continue to grow. And then it's not quite as common. But I could probably still get something out of it. I don't know.
Why? Because it's a natural part of being a human being. And the court will recognize that.
Special damages, again, they're usually based on some type of measurable dollar. It's just something that, you know, goes beyond. Questions? All right, the last thing, because I've watched times, punitive damages. Punitive damages are awarded to punish.
Again, think of the Bien case. Poor Bien was able to get all kinds of general damages, but the court awarded him punitive damages. Why? Well, because the acts that were committed were so egregious, so beyond reasonable human behavior, that the court wanted to send a message to every other entity that could engage in that type of behavior. Classic example. I don't remember the exact case, but there was a situation where a woman this is about 20 years ago, maybe 15, went to McDonald's in New Hampshire and decided she was going to go through the drive-thru, buy a cup of coffee, and she did not secure the lid, and she decided to just drive off. And in the process of driving off, she spilled some of her coffee onto her lap and burned herself. Well, a reasonable-minded person would say, hey, dumbass, if you got a coffee, don't try drinking it without having a lid on it. That's the whole purpose of the lid. But when it came down, her attorney was able to produce evidence that showed that McDonald's was heating coffee to like 190 degrees. And they were doing that to keep the coffee hotter longer so it didn't get cold. So they're trying to save money. But she did suffer, you know, significant burns. But the jury awarded her, I think it was like $10 million. Why? Sent a message to McDonald's. In all food, fast food restaurants, you cannot produce food to temperatures to the level where people are going to be injured trying to consume said food. And you know what all the fast food chains did? They changed their policies, and now everything you get is much, 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 much cooler than it once was. Now, this is the last thing. In order to get punitive damages, it will only be awarded if you get compensatory damages. So if you go in and the jury doesn't think that you deserve anything for compensation, you're not going to get punitive damages. Because typically punitive damages are linked. They have to be proportional. Now, there is no exact science to it. But generally speaking, the Supreme Court has determined that any punitive damages in excess of 9 to 1, 9 times more than the compensatory damages, are not reasonable. So to put it another way, if you go in and you win a claim and you win yourself $50,000, the court is not going to turn around and award you $7.2 billion just because they think you're sweet. That will be struck down on appeal. It will be reproportioned to, generally speaking, about 9 to 1. And by the way, last point, I know I'm out of time, that ratio was made in one of the first successful cases that a person made against the Philip Morris, the makers of Marlboro cigarettes. All right. We finished torts. We gave you all the damages. I want you to look at the cases for the torts. That's homework assignment number 4. I think that's the tort one. Take a look. Those are not you be the judges. I actually put the court's opinion in there. So we do the analysis. I don't care what you think. I want to know what the court thinks. Okay? All right. Dismissed.